Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Woman Power. Yes, let me tell you, we've got a guest today. By the time I got through reading and reviewing her material, I was pooped. This woman is unbelievable at what she does. Jan Reynolds is my guest today, and I thought, you know what? I'll stick with the gym. This woman has put out a book, and actually, we're getting the information out a little bit ahead of the book's printing because it is dynamic. If you love a sense of adventure, well, you'll get it and then some in the real form. High altitude woman, from extreme sports to indigenous cultures, she really dug down deep inside of herself and pulled out something that all of us have. I call it guts. But it's more than that. It is a lot more. Jan Reynolds, I want to welcome you to the show.
Hi, it's so great to be here and talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm delighted. I want my audience to know about your background. You're a prize-winning photojournalist. You have been on just about every continent on this planet. You are very accomplished as an athlete. You were a medal winner in the World Cup biathlon. You have been in high altitudes, of which we're going to talk about, skiing and mountain climbing. You've established records. You have lectured. You've been featured in all kinds of publications. You have just done an amazing amount of things. And you're only, gee whiz, you've got more to do. But I am just astonished at what you have even been able to survive, my Lord. I went through this book. And normally I'm able to go through materials pretty quickly, but I had my highlighter in hand, and I went, she did what? This is what she did. Oh, my God. She went over this? You've got to be kidding. You mean you had to do this? Oh, my word. So I'm going through all of this, and I just found it so fascinating.
Oh,
how
great.
How quickly you realize, and I know my audience is going to think this is wacky after what I've just said, the differences in the thinking patterns between men and women.
I know. So this book, we'll see how it goes. But I'm doing the classic thing I always do, something that people haven't done before, and I don't set out saying that's what I'm going to do. It's my natural inclination. Don't ask me why. It's just the way I was made. So really, this book is kind of a combination of adventure meets self-help. So people go like, what? Where and how do we shelve this? You know?
Mm-hmm.
But it does make some sense, because on all of these expeditions that I set world records, because now I'm pushing 60, I was climbing and skiing with only men, because they were the guys that were doing it at my level, or I was doing it at their level, however you want to look at it. So I had this little petri dish of experience, and I got to see close up what I was thinking, what I was doing, and what the guys were thinking, what they were doing, and it fascinated me because, and go ahead, people can just throw their hands up and say, she just said, what? But really, I do feel and believe this, that our hormones are chemicals. Well, this is proven. Our hormones are chemicals. Those chemicals are in our brains, and our brains function differently because of those chemicals. And men and women think, speak, and behave differently. Now, we can be very similar. We are very similar. But there are those differences, and that fascinates me, and that's part of the balance of our species. And so these expeditions where I was the only woman with all men were fascinating from that standpoint, from a social standpoint for me, along with all the climbing and skiing that we were doing.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I found so interesting, and you noted this in your book, is that often, and especially when you started, because you were younger, and the men that you were doing climbing with, these guys were really talented. We're not talking about persons that were just pie in the sky, gee, I want to do these things. These were hardened, well-experienced climbers.
They were some of the best in the world at the time, because we were setting world records. These guys were awesome.
Yeah, they really incredible men. For a woman to come into their environment, You tell the story in your book about how this one guy takes you on this hike and you don't have the right equipment and you're going through all this stuff and it's like, sorry, Toots, you had to prove it to me. And I go, ooh, that's cast iron.
He could have killed me.
I have one in each hand and go, bam, 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 bam. Was that really necessary?
Well, it didn't die, so I blew it off. But yes, he took me out for a run, and I had on only a jog bra, little nylon shorts, and I had these running shoes. And if anyone out there is a runner, if you remember those old Nike waffle trainers, they have these little nubbins on the bottom and a flexible sole. Well, that's the worst thing to rock climb in. And he took me up on the Grand, and we'd gone far enough that we were committed. It was better to go up than to go down. And I had to do, I don't know if there are any climbers out there, but I had to pull off this 5'9" move with no rope. He took me for a run. We had absolutely no equipment with us, no protection, no ropes, nothing. So I'm basically in my underwear with these bad shoes for climbing in. I'd be better off if I was barefoot, but there's no way on a rock face that you can take your shoes off. Mm-hmm. I had to make an instant decision on how to make this 5'9" move, cross a chasm that if I slipped, I would fall thousands of feet and I'd be dead. And I couldn't, you couldn't, one couldn't let their brain think too long, because when you're rock climbing, you also have this little bag that hangs from your waist that has chalk in it. It's just like you see a gymnast, how they put chalk on their hands so they won't slip on the balance beam or the uneven bars. Well, when you rock climb, you put your hand in the chalk bag for the same reason. I had no chalk bag. I'm running. I'm all sweaty. I had to make that move before any nerves could kick in and make my hand so sweaty I'd peel off, I'd slip off that move. So I didn't have time to get mad at the guy. I didn't have time. It's one of those split decisions. You're here. It's a 5'9" move. You better make it. It's your best chance of survival right now. And I pulled the move off and made it. We made it to the top. And then here are all these men with helmets and big racks of climbing gear and climbing ropes. And back then they were called 60-40 jackets. You know, they're on the top of the Grand Teton. And they're looking at me in my freaking underwear with running shoes like, what? So I look at my buddy Kim, who's a guide. He's one of the Teton guides. He was like the best. So only someone like him would ever solo the Grand. And he looks at me and he goes, let's get out of here. And I'm like, oh my God, that down climb that? And he goes, oh no, if you go off the other side, we can just run down. That's when I was ready to kill him, because you could just walk up to the top on another route. He took me up that on purpose just to see how I would behave and if I could handle it. What if I had died trying?
Well, this is, it sort of reminds me of the Navy SEALs, the way they do things. So it's like you went through an initiation process. Now, men listening to this would say, yeah, that's what we guys do. Well, perhaps, but not necessarily. But this, when you're out, when you're mountain climbing, when you're rock climbing, when you're doing any of this, number one, you'd better be in real good physical shape, because you're going to be experiencing a lot of things that you just don't have on your outlook calendar. Thank you very much. There's a lot of things you have to be mentally, physically, emotionally, and I think even spiritually prepared to withstand some pretty ugly stuff, which you have experienced on a number of these climbs. And one of the most significant statements that I felt was in your book is that after you had your son, you found that there was generally, with the men, oh my goodness, now you're not one of the guys anymore because you had a baby. Big deal.
Oh, yeah.
What? But you said you really became aware of something, especially with the mothers that you interacted, because you have that commonality. That's just what we women do. We talk about our babies and all that kind of good stuff. The reality is that the female, even though we may feel like we're in a man's world, the adaptability and the stamina and the strength of the female is amazing, absolutely amazing. And you made a statement that men use language to create hierarchy and to compete, and women use language to bond and support. Men are naturally more aggressive, assertive, and competitive, and women aren't so interested. They say, fine, I'm so glad you're doing so well. Congratulations, I'm thrilled for you. And they don't want to necessarily compete the way the men do. And this is something that nature has created so that there can be a balance. I think when we get in trouble is we make one superior to the other. And that's one of the big lessons that you came away with and that you are imparting to others at this time, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is, and I have to be careful here because I use a lot of different sources when I make my comments, and a lot, sort of my basic tome volume is a book called Half the Human Experience. The subtitle is The Psychology of Women, and it's written by Janet Shipley Hyde, and she's now working on the 8th edition. I have the 7th edition. So this is a book that's used at colleges and universities for kind of Women's Psychology 202. It's a little advanced, and so what I've been doing is using some of my personal anecdotal experiences so I can talk about them as a vehicle. But then I look at the social science. I look at the tests. There are certain tests that can be set up to measure some of these things. So I'm not just, in my book, throwing this at people in terms of this is just my opinion. It's more like, here was my personal experience, and you know what? Here's the social data to back it up. But it comes in the story. I don't want it to sound too much like a psychology book. I've got footnotes.
No, it's not.
Like that.
Your book is about what the interaction was like. Now, you're very unique because you are a woman that you said that in working with the men that there were patterns that they had and they demonstrated that in many ways you absorbed. You had strong self-confidence and self-assurance, which, my God, when you have to climb up these ridiculous mountains, I was telling my husband, earlier today, I said, you know what? This would not be for me. First of all, I really am not interested in messy hair. That is not, and the idea of having grease, dirt, and mud packed on my head, first of all, I'm sorry, this is not going to work for me. And secondly,
wait for just a second, though, about the hair. Can I jump in about the hair? So the thing is,
yeah,
with your hair, I had long hair. You just comb it and brush it and you braid it, and it's under two silk balaclavas with a hat over it. So it's well cared for, and you don't even see it or mess with it. and those good oils are great for your hair. By the time you finally wash it a month or two later, it's awesome.
Oh, yeah, I bet it's awesome. That is awesome. But also, I'm not interested in having chunks of ice fall on my head. I have an attitude about this, but I sure respect what you've done and appreciated it. I enjoyed the humor throughout your book. But let's talk about the mountain climbing, because this is something that is very, very challenging. And it's a very small group of people that do the mountain climbing. And I think just about all of us that are present today while you're with me have seen the stories about the people going to Everest, have, you know, heard about Hillary and what he did. But you told another side of the story as an aftermath of what he experienced and how the environment changed there. Let's go into why it is that the mountains called to you. What is it that for you in your spirit, in your soul, that made you say, yes, I want to be a part of this?
I just think the outdoors have always been a real draw for me. And I started out as a cross-country ski racer, and that got me in the woods. So I was running for training and then skiing in the woods. And when I was in high school and was one of the top national racers, as a farm girl in Vermont, number six of seven, we never went anywhere. You got to milk the cows two times a day. But I made this team, so they took us to Colorado. And that really opened my eyes. I did very well in the competition itself. But one of those days, we took a break, and we went up into the mountains to a place called Rabbit Ears Pass. And when I skied on the snow in and around those huge peaks, I was in such awe and wonder that I went, this is it. This is for me. This is beauty. This is pure. And I was hooked from that time on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when you started your story about getting involved skiing on these mountain ranges, there was a man by the name of Ned that you had a relationship with, and also Alan. Now, the one thing that often occurs with groups that go together, whether it is three or four or it is 150, there always is a need for someone to have a position of leadership. And if you have what we often call the alpha males, if you had two or three of them in there and you're an alpha female, then this is like, oh, my goodness. So the first thing that people are going to go off on is, oh, my goodness, there must have been sexual mayhem. And I'm going to say, oh, please, get real. I mean, when you're climbing these student mountains, you're surviving. You're that's the last thing on anybody's agenda. But it's amazing the perspectives that you give here, because each of these men that you climbed with, they're so talented, yet every one of them was their own unique individual. The challenge of being in that abundant male testosterone level, that really is something to experience.
Well, you know, I observed that, and I saw what was going on, and this is where I started to notice some of the difference, because I'm going to throw this sample out, and this I've done a little research on, and it's in the books, but in general, now we're talking about generalities all the time. You have to remember that men and women fall on a scale from male, think of masculine on one end, feminine on the other, and any individual person can fall on that scale in the middle, towards masculine, toward the feminine. So I want everyone out there to realize that we should all see each other as individuals. However, there are statistics that allow us to look at a gender as a whole and make some generalizations, and there are some tests behind it, and I'm happy to talk about some of these tests too, so people will know that I'm just not talking through my hat. But when I was with the guys, typically men use language to create a hierarchy. You speak, and the way you speak shows who's in charge, who's top dog, kind of thing. Women, when they use language, they tend to bond and connect. So I'll use an example here, a benign example. So I'm home, and both my husband and I are going to go mountain biking. We think we are during that day. We're going to take turns. We've got kids. So his buddy calls up, and he goes, oh, man, I got to work. I can't get out. I'm not going to be able to ride. And I hear my husband through the wall where he's working go, ah, too bad. I'm out of here. I'm riding. This is a great day. I'll see you later. Talk to you. Bye. My girlfriend calls up, and she goes, oh, no, I can't go. You know, little Sally's sick, and I can't, you know, remember what the reason was, but she couldn't go. You know, my kid's sick. I can't go ride. And I'm like, oh, I'm really sorry. Can I help? Is there anything I can do? Do you need me to bring you some food? I don't have to ride today. How about if we ride tomorrow? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, now that, people out there might be listening and laughing, but I just remembered that different reaction. And, you know, you can look at some of these books, and they will give you some tests and examples about how they come up with these ideas. And then I just experienced them in my life.
You have a statement in your book that whenever you're mountain climbing, because storms can come in, I mean, one of the first storms that you talked about in your book was a 4-day storm you were up at St. Winnie's. You had gotten up to St. Winnie's. Actually, you did not when this storm hit. You guys were isolated for 4 days in a storm.
Yeah.
You had hellacious conditions. I mean, I live in the Pacific Northwest. It's not unusual for mountain climbers to get stuck on a ledge. They die.
Yeah.
We've had more than one death this year because the mountain never is free of the glacier. Mountain Rainier River is never, ever free. You do not take anything for granted when you go up there. It is very precarious. If you don't pay attention, you can go to your death in less than a split second. And so here you are, you're in this storm.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think, how are we going to survive? And sometimes the best laid plans you bring out in your book, how no matter what you do, you can have your list, you can have everything, invariably something is always forgotten. On one expedition, it was a map. And you go, how in the heck could you possibly forget the silly map? Well,
I know.
Your reasoning is, hey, this is something that happens, so what do? You have to adapt. And I just go through this. Like I said, I was exhausted by the time I finished reading your book. I just thought, my goodness, how come I didn't lose 35 pounds just reading this? I mean, you guys were on the edge of starvation many times. Sometimes you only had one bouillon cube.
We split
a gallon of water, and you split it. This is amazing.
And that's after 4 days of not eating.
Yeah, right.
Because we ran out of food, and we'd get stormed in, and what are you going to do? You can only do what you can do. But, you know, I wasn't sure if I was clear with the other answer, and I'll throw it in here. When I was talking about language and men, you know, use it for hierarchy, that's what I was talking about with Ned and Alan, and egos getting rubbed raw with men so many times. I have found when you have the very strong masculine men that fall on the masculine end of the scale, which can happen out on these expeditions, what you'll see is, for example, the guy might be looking at this rock wall and they'll say, okay, here's the route. We got to go this way. And then the other guy, he has the option to say, yeah, okay, it looks good. Then the first guy is top dog. What he said goes. Or if the second guy says, I don't think so, I think it goes this way, then it's a head-butting thing. And that's the hierarchy part of conversation, and that's what I meant when you brought up Alan and Ned on an expedition and how, you know, you could see these egos getting rubbed raw and the way women tend to connect and bond through conversation. Something else that women do that men can, the male initially, some time ago, the professors were largely male, and when they did these social tests, they would monitor what was said in a room, and they would say that women use disclaimers when they talk, so they were not confident. For example, when women were talking, they might say, oh, I think we should put this back in the oven and reheat it. I'm thinking of a party. Don't you think would be at the end? Or they might say, you know, it's really kind of hot in here. What do you think? Should we open the window maybe? So those things that are maybe or don't you think at the end are called disclaimers. But what that is, what is going on, isn't that the woman suggesting the action? She's not, it's not that she's unconfident. It's in general, and I watch myself do this, in general, we're inviting conversation. We're inviting conversation to get a consensus. So I would see myself when we're looking at a route, I'd say, so guys, I think, you know, perhaps we should go this way. What do you think? I wouldn't say we're going this way. So it was that disclaimer, I think, made a difference. And our lead climber on probably the expeditions that set the most world records, his name is Jim Bridwell, and he's amazing. And at one point, when he and I were in the tent alone, he didn't make a big thing in front of the guys, but he looked at me, and he said, you know, I think, you know, you could tell he was concerned there was going to be a woman on an expedition of his. He said, you know, I've always remembered this. That's why I remembered it so long ago, because it meant so much to me. He goes, you know, I think it's good to have a woman on an expedition because they think she monitors things. And I was so dumbfounded, I didn't ask him what he meant. But I asked him later on, and he goes, well, you know, you just monitor things. That's all he would say. And I think it was his way of saying there's a different energy and a way about doing things that gets introduced into the mix in the way we speak, which I've given some examples here, and behave, that helps the mix.
Yes. Now, there are so many points of information regarding climbing. One of them I was really fascinated with, and that is the information about caves. And you say, inside a cave, the cold air sinks, so no one ever wants to sleep up off the floor of a cave. And I thought, that is fascinating information, because caves have their own ecosystem within them.
Yeah, they do.
And here you've got this environment, and in a million years, I would never have thought of that. It just wouldn't have people
thought. You start to figure it out, though. We were snowed in for, what, 4 days? We knew that, but you'd also start to figure it out. Down around your feet would be quite cold. Mm-hmm. And you'd build yourself, you know, in a snow cave, you can design your interior, you know, think igloo. So pretty soon you'd be making yourself a snow shelf to sleep up above the floor. You figure it out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all this information is so available. Humans are the most adaptable species on planet Earth. We live in the Arctic, and we can be in temperatures of 90, 100 below with wind chill. We live in the Sahara Desert, where when I was there, it was 120 degrees hot. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just amazing species. And pretty much around the world, especially with indigenous people, we have learned so much about every environment on this planet that all this information is available. Mm-hmm. And then you may or may not have been wanting to talk about this some. You can see how, after being on expeditions and living very primally like an animal, then how I was drawn to the indigenous people around the world, how they figured out how to do it.
Oh, and you have
really
wonderful
captured
stories.
By imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You have the most wonderful story in here about the indigenous women. And I love the one where I think she's called a Sherpani, and her name is Silly, or was it Sally?
We called her Sally. Saley,
Saley. And Saley, you couldn't communicate via language, but you communicated, and one of the ways you communicated was with music. And I was, I laughed when I could see it so well, how here she is, she's in the Himalayas, I believe, in the Himalayan mountains, and she's got yaks, and she has herds that she's working with, and you're with her, and here you are, a Caucasian woman from a world that, compared to what she has, is so sophisticated. Here you are with a bunch of yaks, and this delightful person who has welcomed you as a friend, and when you try imitating yak calls, she doubles up in laughter, and both of you are just having a great time, and you pull out your little tiny musical instrument, because she has her own form of music. You share your music. And there is a bond here between the two of you. What a beautiful soul you met.
Yeah, she was awesome. And it was mostly all men. You know, they're the cowboys with the axe.
Mm-hmm.
But Saley was along with them, and she was the only other female. And, you know, it was just nice to have her company, but she was awesome. She could herd those yaks. And because I grew up on a dairy farm, the calls I was making, one of my jobs as a little kid was to go get the cows, and the pastures are big. So you develop your calls, and the cows start to come because the cows want to be milked, so they know that it's time.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have to go get them, but anyhow, I had developed my calls. So she thought it was hilarious because I'm doing my own calls to her yaks, and she could see that I get it, but I have my own version. And then she played her instrument, and then I pulled out mine, and we played for each other. So we just started to realize the commonalities that we had together. And that was pretty cool. And I've written a book also, which you haven't seen. It's called Mother and Child. And the subtitle is Visions of Indigenous Parenting Around the World. And one of the things that I learned being with these women is that you could sit anywhere on a bus, on a rock in the Himalaya, in the sand in the Sahara, and if women know certain things, if you've been through childbirth, you've raised kids, you just know. I've been in Southeast Asia, way out nowhere, and I'll pick up a woman's crying baby for her so she can get something done on the side. And there's just that connection that we have that men together don't quite get.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Our hormones have taught us to bond and to not eat our young, to be more... Our hormones make us, and oxytocin is something else that's thrown in there. That's part of nursing, but we have more of that in our bodies. It just primes, we don't necessarily have to be that way, but it primes us more to be nurturing, bonding, and connecting. And I just see that women as a gender, we have that in a way. I can sit by any woman in the world and I can just feel connected. And I don't necessarily, I'm not a guy, I can't say, but I don't really feel that guys have that same thing.
Mm-hmm. It depends. Like you said, there's a spectrum, and there are some men that do, but if you go into the real strong positioning of the masculine, whether it's in the female body or in the male body, that is a positioning. There's a disassociation. There is often a lack of a relationship unless they make it okay to do that. And then that
You know, they've done studies that, in general, men are more comfortable sitting side by side. Let's say, okay, I'm going to be totally sexist here, but let's say men are watching a ball game or this or that. They like being side by side. They like riding their bikes. They like being together in an activity, but more side to side. Women literally enjoy face-to-face, talking to each other, looking in eyes, and as a matter of fact, they have found that in conflict, especially if it's an interpersonal conflict, men feel really uncomfortable when women are looking in their eyes and telling them what the problem is. Their response to this kind of stress is fight or flight, and it's usually flight. Mm-hmm. And women's response is to tend and befriend. So that's here's where I'm going with this book, and this is giving me a chance to bring it up. What I'm hoping is that, in a small way, I'm hoping people are entertained with the book, but they see that men and women think, speak, and behave subtly differently. So that if we understand that, then we may not have, we'll find better ways to communicate and get things across, work together as teams, work together as in relationships. And I think that subtle understanding is going to take us all farther ahead and working really well together. So by throwing out that example of the eye-to-eye contact and connecting gives the guy fight-or-flight response, and the woman is just really trying to attend and befriend, you're not going to get that discussion done. You got to figure
out the
rules of the game.
Jen, we're out of time. This has been just wonderful. You've done an incredible job, and I want to tell those of you, male or female, high-altitude woman, you're going to be holding your breath during certain parts of this book. This is great reading for any time. But during summertime, if you're feeling bored, pick up this book, and you'll be grateful that you're in a nice, comfortable, cozy spot. But the adventures that this woman, Jan Reynolds, has gone through, the wisdoms that she learned that she's writing about today, and she is always out there seeking adventure on one level or another, and it's a wonderful level of information for women to let them know that they are capable of pulling out of themselves anything they want, and for men to understand that there are options for them to grow into and that who they are is terrific. But as Jan said, we can become a team and work with the strengths as well as the weaknesses, and it's so important. JanReynolds.com is the website you go to. Awesome information. Jan, JanReynolds. Jan, this has been delightful. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, thanks for having me. And if anyone does want a book, if they go to my website, click contact. You get me personally, and I can send you one. They haven't hit the shelves yet, but they will soon. But I'll get a bunch, and you can have one. Just let me know. I'll sign
and
it any way you want.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah. I think every girl should read this book. I really do. I think it's marvelous.
I love that.
I think this discussion about it is just amazing what you did, and you've done such a beautiful job of writing it all out. This is Donna Sebo, JanReynolds.com. Check it out. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and chat with me today, is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Now, tomorrow we're going to have an open mic day, so you'll be able to call me at any time during the hour. And we've got a great lineup of guests next week, so I'll tell you about that tomorrow. High Altitude Woman, this book had so much in it that it was really difficult. But can you imagine climbing Mount Everest today? Now, the riggers, they've got different equipment and all kinds of things have progressed. But I just got a copy of the National Geographic. I was going through it, and I was mentioning it to the engineer while we were on break. There's about 200 people every day. They have so many people that want to climb this mountain that the waste from people, the destruction from people has been just incredible on this mountain. Now, Mount Everest is going to survive it all. But now they've imposed rules and regulations for mountain climbers that whatever you take in, you have to bring down. And so slowly but surely, they're cleaning up the environment. But Hillary, the first climber that actually got up to the top, and by the way, she has a fascinating story in her book about how there were Chinese climbers that were first to get to Everest. Not the English. Mm-mm. It was the Chinese. But at the time that this group of three Chinese men were doing it, they were not being mentioned at all because of other things that were going on in the world. But one of the things that Sir Hillary recognized is that in doing these expeditions, that the Sherpas, which had a very difficult, these are people, wonderful people, they had a very difficult time making a living. So they found that by cutting down their trees and building houses for the mountain climbers and doing that enabled them to make an income. So they literally decimated their forests. Then that caused
and erosion of land. When rains would come in, there were floods. Sides of mountains just disappeared. They didn't have fuel because the trees were gone. They'd used so many of them for their building. So then they went to using cow dung or yak dung. And that was wonderful for them. However, by using the yak dung, drying it, having it in patties, what occurred is that eliminated a natural nutrient for the growth of plants. So what occurred is they actually created a desert. And so Hillary felt very badly about that and consequently decided that he wanted to assist the Sherpas and do what he could so that they could bring back to life the area that they lived in. And the reason I'm wanting to bring one of these points out, like I said, her book is just loaded with history and information. It's just an awesome read. But we human beings have done that historically throughout the centuries. And to be able to revitalize an area often takes mindful attention, paying attention. And that is what we're having to be aware of today. In some parts of the world, there are edicts that are being put out that if you cut down a tree, you have to plant three. Well, maybe planting three trees would be a very good idea, but sometimes you need to mix species. One of the things that has been found that if you have just nothing but one species in an area, usually a blight can come along and affect it. Diversity is very, very important. Learning all of these things takes time. And in our world today, fortunately, we are becoming more aware. In Africa, there are women who are, in fact, there's one woman, I don't recall her name, maybe one of you could give it to me, maybe you know about it, but she has literally, on her own, been able to plant over 1 million trees. And these are trees that were indigenous to an area. Now, this is phenomenal, but do you know, there were those that said, why are you planting these trees? They're taking up precious water. You don't want to do it. And there is an ignorance that had to be overcome by explaining to people that when you have the trees, the ecosystem that develops supports the production of food, it offers shade during the hottest months of the year, and it actually can support a water supply. So there's so many things that we just don't understand and we'll make judgments on. And this battle goes on all of the time. We live in a world that has so much diversity in it. Black and white really is not the best way to look at things. They are questions that need to be asked. If this is a situation that has evolved, if we have something that is not working well, we need to ask, what was here before? What is going to work best for this environment? And is it really going to be beneficial for us to bring something else in that is not common to this environment? Think of the rabbits that were brought over to Australia. I think of Hawaii. You have the mongoose and the rats. Well, the mongoose was taken over to Hawaii to kill the rats. But they have different sleeping schedules. So the mongoose and the rats very rarely encountered each other. The rats became prolific, and the mongoose, they went and killed off a lot of the land birds by eating their eggs, because that was their source of food. So many indigenous birds in the islands disappeared because of the introduction of a creature. Someone said, well, the mongoose will go after the rats. The carnivorous, this is great. Well-meaning, but not really understanding or knowing how to ask the right questions. And isn't that the case in life? So often we have to go through these learning curves. Look at the wallabies in Australia. They are prolific. They now have to have wallaby hunts because there's so many of them. Now, this wasn't the case until farming came in to Australia. Now, why is that? Free food! The wallabies went through so many generations, who knows how many hundreds, thousands of years they've been there, but by golly, they had the feast or famine cycle. Well, when you found the agricultural area, My goodness, it was like a 7-Eleven that is going on and on and on. So they go after the crops. They feed. And, of course, they bred. It's an amazing thing. So lots of times we'll complain about situations without understanding the why this evolved. And if you don't have natural predators, if you, you know, there's this fine balance that goes on. It's amazing. Nature is just phenomenal. She teaches us so much if we're willing to learn. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for just a moment. When we come back, I'd be delighted to take your call. 888-627-6008. And we'll be back in just a moment.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere. First thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. I wanted to share some information with you about safety on your computer. Now, PCs, so many of us have them. We've got a few in our office. And spam, oh boy, are you like me? Do you get inundated? Can it take you sometimes a half an hour just to go through your emails and say, this one's out, this is junk, I don't need this, out we go. It takes time to do this, doesn't it? Yes. Well, 43% of the people that were served and surveyed in this consumer report found that they just were getting hit with spam like there was no tomorrow. Sort of like getting the mail, the junk mail, yes. And if you're like me, you get a bucket of that, too, every day. Well, that just seems to be something electronically. At least you don't have to recycle that in the sense of having to put it out in a bin. You put it in your computer bin and you delete it, and that's great. However, here are some points of information that I thought you might be interested in. Those of you that are using Facebook, and all of us have accounts with Facebook, they have found 9.8 million adult Facebook users had their accounts used by an unauthorized person. Their reputation was affected. They might have even been harassed, threatened, or defrauded. Also, they have found several hundred thousand minors were being bullied on Facebook, and at least 3.7 million pre-teenagers violated Facebook's terms of service by actively using the social network. Now, these are huge numbers. Of course, there's huge numbers on Facebook, but these are things they're able to track. Now, 28.5 million Facebook users altered personal information in their profile to protect their privacy. And birth dates and names were the biggest fakes. This is something that is causing a concern on the part of many, many people. But let's be real. This is something privacy has been violated in so many instances. Also, malware. Oh, my goodness, I've been affected with this. I had something that came into my system that was bounced off, but I was made aware of it. And then I looked at the address that came in. It came in from somewhere in China or Nepal or whatever. I don't know. 58.2 million online users experienced a malware infection that affected their computer's features or performance. And the amount of dollars relative to this is $3.9 billion. That's right, a B, like boy. $3.9 billion consumers spent to repair this damage. And the phishing schemes, that's 9.2 million. 9.2 million consumers were tricked into submitting personal data to criminal websites that appear to be well-known companies. Now, that happened with me, with PayPal, with my bank, and I actually had my bank account compromised. Never forgotten that. You don't forget things like that. This is not a joke. So there are sophisticated hackers out there, and hundreds of thousands of people lost money from a bank account because of this happening. And among the big-name companies whose names were used most often, listen carefully to this, Bank of America, Chase, Facebook, PayPal, and Visa. So the key is, if you get anything where they say you need to submit this information, etc., understand, and you probably are well advised of this because you're web savvy anyway, those of you that are listening, but you need to understand they can piggyback software programs, and that's how they got into my information, and they sit and wait. This stuff is so sophisticated that they will wait until you actually go in to use an account, something here, and they will slither in, capture your information, pull it out, and put it into their database. So this is something that we really have to be very, very conscious of. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-627-6008. Also, what I wanted to share with you is a bit of information, 4 points. This was sent to me by a gentleman who is on the East Coast. He said, these are good tips. You might want to have this list by your computer or any place where your cell phone might be a gouge. You might want to put this little list in your purse, or you might want to keep it in your car. For cell phones, and even in your wallet, guys, you might want to do this. First, the emergency number worldwide for all mobile phones is 112. If you find yourself out of a coverage area of your mobile network, and there is an emergency, you can dial 112 and it'll search any existing network to establish the emergency number for you. And this can be dialed even if a keypad is locked. That's right, 112. Also, there's hidden battery power in your cell phone, and if it's really low and you need to activate, press these keys. Star 3370 pound. Star 3370 pound. Your cell phone will automatically restart with this reserve, and the instrument will show a 50% increase in the battery, and it will be recharged when you charge your cell phone the next time. How to disable a stolen mobile phone? All you have to do is get your mobile phone serial number. You key in the following digits on your phone, star pound 06 pound. Star pound 06 pound. A 15-digit code will appear on the screen. This number is unique to your handset. You need to write it down and keep it somewhere safe. If your phone is stolen, you can phone your service provider and give them this code. They will then be able to block your handset. So even if the thief changes the SIM card in your phone, they won't be able to use it. And you won't get your phone back, but at least you know that whoever stole it can't use it or sell it either. So this may cut back on the thievery of mobile phones. And also free directory service, 800-FREE-411 or 800-373-3411. Free telephone directory service. You don't need to pay for it. This is Donna Sebo. It's been a delight having you with me today. Won't you join me tomorrow? It's an open mic day. All kinds of fun things I'm going to share with you. And I would be delighted if you could join me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Within you beats the soul of an adventurer, adventuress. No matter what your passion or your love in life might be, don't be afraid to climb the mountains of opportunity that will be right in front of you. Even if the going gets rough, remember, with ingenuity, with adaptability, and a willingness to try new things, you're going to find that you'll achieve accomplishments that you couldn't possibly have imagined. This is Donna Siebel. I look forward to chatting with you tomorrow. Bye for now.